Hello everyone and welcome back to Neutral Game, your newbie-friendly fighting game podcast. I am Six Detmar of Scanline Media.
And I am Miroko Trevich of Real Soviet Bear Channel, I guess.
Of the Bear Cord.
Of the Bear Cord. I have many things, but it's all of the things I have are basically me. I don't have a corporation or a media outlet or anything.
Mm-hmm. So we're getting into the busy season here, Mia Drag. We're about to get a bunch of big fighting games hitting pretty soon, huh?
Yeah, a lot of big and a lot of small fighting games. There's BlazBlue Crosstag Battle coming out start of June. There's Fighting EX Lager, the Arika fighting game, which is coming out end of June. There is the Nicolas fighting game, whose name escapes me right now. And I'm also, well, Nicolas being the Japanese indie publisher. Most people probably know the fighting game as the one that has Cave Story characters. And there's Soul Calibur 2, Soul Calibur 6 as well, that's coming out sometime this year. My bet is probably September.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's getting busy.
And then specifically for you and I, we've got some catch-up to do on Unist, the latest release of Uniel at some point.
Yes, we have to do catch-up on that, and I also need to do a catch-up on Pokken for the Switch and see how that works.
Yeah. So with all those games coming up, we're probably going to have a lot of episodes coming up that are game-centric. And so before we get into that rush, we kind of wanted to do one that's going back to more mechanical talk and talking about, you know, features of fighting games and ways to use them to your advantage. So what's our topic this week?
This month we're talking about something that gets thrown out a lot. You've probably heard of the term frame data. And that's probably the one biggest thing that sets apart people who really get into fighting games and people who just, you know, quote unquote play for fun. Usually, when you think somebody's taking the game seriously, they'll talk about frame data, which is essentially how moves work. I guess the best way to put it is because each move in a fighting game has an animation associated with it, usually. And because animations are made up of frames, which is not a unique thing to fighting games, it just, you know, it's just how animation works. So frame data is essentially the non-animation properties of each frame of an animation. So, for example, when the move actually deals damage, or how often, how long you cannot take damage in a move, things like that. It also involves like more complicated things like being able to cancel a frame of animation into something else. And general animation, and it's a weird thing because usually when you're talking about animation frames, that's a very game development thing because every game has frame data. Not only fighting games, like you have it in regular combat-oriented games, like you know your standard platinum-style fighting game, or even a first-person shooter that has frame data in it as well. But it's only really talked about among players in the context of fighting games, from my experience.
Yeah, I feel like this is just a situation of one of the things I love about fighting games is how they sort of boil off a lot of the other elements that other games have. So, like, I mean, you can study frame data in, like, let's say a Dark Souls, and it will be of some use to you, right? Like, you can learn about the properties and the speed and such of your attacks. But it's not nearly as essential because there's so much else going on. In fighting games, it's reduced down so much that frame data becomes more important because there's less to grab onto.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not one of those essential things. Like, you're not required to actually know frame data of a game to be able to play it well. It's more along the lines of people naturally end up gravitating towards it because it does contain useful information for them.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about it a bit more later, but there is, like, people, I've talked to people who, like, enjoy fighting games, but then, you know, they get, like, worked by somebody who's really into them, right? and they get really frustrated about frame data and about people knowing frame data. And there's this attitude that it's sort of like 0 or 100, right? Like you either knows no frame data or you know how many active frames every move has. And there is a middle ground that can work for you.
Yeah, and I think it helps at least. Like on my end, I'm very middle ground when it comes to that.
Same. Yeah.
So now that we've like explained like on a more larger high level what frame data is, one of the things in just context of fighting games that's most important is that an animation or a move is usually broken up into startup frames, active frames, and recovery frames. What that means is a startup is essentially the windup of your move. So let's say in Street Fighter, a startup would be as you are about to punch the character pulling back his arm and getting ready to actually pull the swing off. And then the active is the actual swing coming out and making contact. And then the recovery is after the swing is over, how long you need to wait until the character is able to do anything else. So until he pulls his arm back into the default position. That's kind of the most basic explanation of that.
Yeah.
And what you'll often see, aside from that, is essentially the properties of a move. People will say, oh, this is invulnerable on startup, or this is invulnerable while active, or this is has a long recovery. And we'll go over what each of those things mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the most important things is so... if you think about like frame data, it is telling you, like as you say, it's got the startup, the active, and the recovery are sort of, as you say, like the three stages of the animation. But during those stages, it's more complicated than just is the move like hitting or not, right?
Yeah.
You can see, like, if you're looking at the frame data, you can see what's called the I always mix these two up. I mix up hitbox and hurtbox all the time.
Hurtbox is where you can get hurt. Hitbox is the attack area, essentially, where you're dealing damage.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I always get it wrong. So, you can see, like, on a lot of them, a lot of games that I play, it's like the red square indicating this is what the attack is actually attacking. That's the spaces where it will hit. And you can also see your hurt box, the area that you can be hit, and it will shift as the move goes. And then other games will have things like, you know, like the throw box and stuff. It gets complicated with some games.
Yeah, to explain what like these boxes are, in case you aren't familiar with it, essentially because very few fighting games do actual collision checks, so they don't actually check whether, for example, in a punch, the fist is connecting with the body part of the opponent. What it's really doing is you have these invisible boxes on top of that animation. And what is happening in the background is that the game is checking whether this box that deals damage, that represents me dealing damage, is connecting with the box that represents the opponent's body, where he can take damage, which is it essentially is a very old school way of doing it, but it's been proven to work very well, which is why you see it still in use, I say. But the drawback is often you will have the drawback is you will have issues where it looks like you hit when you shouldn't have, or it might look like you missed when you shouldn't have, depending on how the move comes out. But the advantage of it, though, is it's more consistent than, say, collision-based checks, because even though you'd think that collision would be more more consistent because, oh, it's, you know, it's showing me what's on the actual screen, it's a bit harder to predict because there's a lot of variables, like, you know, whether the opponent is higher than me, like how close he is exactly, what stance he is in. So it definitely gives for a different feel of the game.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like some of the best examples of this actually can come from, like, honestly, from Street Fighter V, which is one of the reasons I find the game frustrating. But, like, if you play Zangief in Street Fighter V and you do his spinning pile driver, you can stand a good distance away from your opponent and do the move, and you'll see Zangief reach out and hug the air, and his hands be a pretty good distance from them, and they will teleport into his arms because of hitboxes.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you'll see someone fight, like, in Abigail in that game, who is a very tall character, and Abigail will crouch, and you can barely tell because Abigail is so tall, and people will punch, and the punch will just slide right through Abigail's face without doing anything, because Abigail's hurtbox is significantly smaller than Abigail's model. So it's just that disconnect.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, I guess it's like a game development production thing, but because it's so expensive to do new animations, when you want to rebalance a game, the first thing you'll do is actually change to those boxes, the hitboxes and the hurtboxes, because that's cheap. You can always iterate on that and test it, rather than investing in a full new set of animations, and then if it's not good enough, then needing to do another new set of animations, which eventually leads, if you have a long-standing game, unless you're updating those animations, eventually you'll just get very weird hits, which I think is the most common, at least in, like, from what I've played. Like, it's very common in Guilty Gear, where there's just a lot of moves that look like they're high, but they're not really, or that look like they're low, but they're not really, just because they haven't, because it's so expensive to update, especially their animations, which require custom shading every time as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a clash of balance versus, you know, the budget, in a way that I think is pretty understandable, though it's unfortunate for the player sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's just, you know, even if it's not, like, just budget, like, there's a limit to, you know, how many animators can work on a single animation as well, so even yeah. with a larger budget, you're still constrained by just real-life limitations of how animation works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
But how you mentioned that Zangief has this grapple where pulls you in. That's also, I guess it's also like one of the weird things where they probably tried to make him like good because you know, he's a grappler and grapples are generally like much harder to play and much harder to win with. So it's probably, like, a conscious call, but it doesn't help that it just looks weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, there's different design philosophies about that stuff. I think I find it more important than DIMPs, the developers of Street Fighter, do, right? I think that's probably fair to say.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
But aside from just, you know, like how those hitboxes and hurtboxes work, one thing we touched upon earlier was that there are different properties to frames, like whether it is invulnerable or move cancelable. And how that works is because each frame of animation can hold a certain like data. You can, like, how it usually works is you tag the properties on each frame, like what this move does. And what the two most common things I see in fighting games is whether it is invulnerable, like completely or not, which is, you know, a hurtbox arrangement, or whether it can be cancelled into something else. So, like, if you do, like, if your light punch connects, and then even though your light punch may have a very short recovery, you can cancel it into a medium punch, and then you can cancel that medium punch during its recovery into heavy punch, and so it makes the game a lot faster paced, so players don't need to wait every time for their moves to completely recover.
Yeah. And also, so other properties that that come up, I think there are two more that you'll see a fair bit of, which is, like, there are a lot of games will treat a character differently based on whether or not they're airborne. And so, like, there are certain moves, like, that cannot be blocked if you're in the air. And so frames have a property telling you whether or not the character is in the air. And sometimes that's applied to things where it doesn't look like you're in the air. And the other thing is that there are some frame properties where they make things specifically invulnerable to throws only.
Yeah, or projectiles as well. There's also some of those.
Good point.
Like you might have a situation where a regular hit might actually deal damage to you, but if it's projectile invulnerable, a projectile will just go through it. I don't know how common that is in Street Fighter, but I know in Arc System Works games, they do a lot of projectile invulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's, like, I don't know that he has it in 5, but, like, Dhalsim had a move called Yoga Tower in Street Fighter 4, whose entire purpose was just he hit a stance and he was projectile immune for a second there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big part of his game plan, was just dodging fireballs, and that's all it did.
Yeah, yeah. But that is, like, this is probably one of the more technical things we talk about. Mm-hmm. Probably what's more important for like our listeners is, you know, what good is this for me and should I feel like I need to know how to use this?
Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, what stage of learning are you at with frame data? How do you use frame data in your play these days?
So what I usually do is after I've, gotten a feel for a character and see what works and doesn't. I generally just skim over frame data just to understand which moves come out the fastest or which moves have certain properties that maybe I wasn't aware of. Like, usually with Guilty Gear, it's, oh, I didn't know this was projectile invulnerable because there's no reason to know that it is. Because a lot of those moves look weird when they are, for example. Like as a forward punch will make your entire upper body invulnerable to projectile, which is very rarely relayed in the animation. So I usually do it for that, just to understand what my tools are. But a lot of the other things, like, for example, I'll know just by playing which of my moves are unsafe, so which moves can be punished if the opponent blocks them. And even though there's frame data, and I might know, I can see exactly how, you know, how much frames I have to recover when I'm blocked. I usually just know, okay, this isn't safe, or this is, slightly safe, or it's completely safe. I usually just categorize it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm less thorough in my testing than I should be as to, like, what moves will do in some situations. So I do, like, pretty early on, like, with any character I'm starting to get at all serious about, I look at their frame data, and I specifically look for, like, moves that are, like, plus on block, right? Which means that your recovery is faster than the number of frames they have to block for. So any move that's plus on block, which is what you call that, it means that you can act before they can if they block it, and it gives you a huge advantage in pressure and offensive situations.
Yeah. Often when I'm playing with friends, I'll hear the question like, oh, is that plus and block? Because, like, even if it is or isn't, sometimes you'll be like, oh, I'm not sure if it is actually plus and block, or I just responded with a move that was too slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the sort of thing, like, you can, the other thing is if people don't know this stuff, like, depending on how people are responding, like, stuff will feel like it's plus on block, but you're actually just responding badly, as you say. Like, I had a matchup where I was getting worked by a friend, and I was thoroughly convinced that the move they were using was plus on block. And finally I asked, and they're like, no, it's minus two. Like, it's actually slower. It's just that I was trying to punish with moves that were way too slow, and it was destroying me.
Yeah, that's why I usually say, like, if you assume that something is plus on block, but you don't know, like, when you're fighting against it, your safest bet is just see if you can, like, do a poke in the middle of it, or, like, after it, because even if it doesn't connect, you at least know, oh, I can actually get something in.
Mm-hmm. And the one other thing I tend to, like, look for whenever I can is I look for a move in my arsenal that has, like, really early invulnerability in it, which so I can use it as a reversal. Sort of a, like, you know, like your Shoryukens, right? Your move that has invulnerability early in the attack so that you can use it to escape pressure. Like, get off me.
Yeah, reversals are really important. It's, like, there aren't too many games that just straight up say, oh, you've done a reversal. I know Guilty Gear does it, like when you do a reversal, it actually puts out the message that you're doing it, as it does like combos or counter hits. But in general, yeah, that means that the move is quick, it's invulnerable in startup, and you can essentially do it as a response to your opponent while they are recovering, or like after they've done their own move, things like that.
Yeah, and if you're using this advice to look at your character and you're like, that's weird, I don't see a move with invulnerability. Yeah, that happens sometimes. That's a bummer. Some characters just don't have it, and it makes you have to be a lot more patient when it comes to defending, because a reversal is really useful
in
helping people respect your personal space.
Yeah, I'm currently playing a Guilty Gear character that is notorious for just not having a single reversal without spending meter.
Who's that?
Venom. He does not have a...
Huh. Oh, right.
He does not have a proper reversal. He now has two reversals, which is... One is a universal mechanic, which is the dead angle thing. Like, while you're blocking, you can spend meter to interrupt the opponent's attack. And the other
is... an alpha counter.
Yeah. And the other is when he uses his super, but he needs to use his burst stock as well, so the enhanced super... So essentially he has one for meter and burst, so he is very bad at escaping pressure.
Yeah, that sounds pretty rough. I know that I have to spend, when we're playing Blaze Blue and I'm playing Terumi, I have to spend meter to get out of pressure, and it feels bad.
Yeah, I think I got spoiled by playing Hakumen and just half of my moves being reversals.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
And then eventually, like, if you push through and keep learning frame data and keep making use of it, eventually you get to a level where you can, like, figure out combos just by looking at a page, right? You're like, oh, okay, based on, like, the active frames of this in recovery and how long it puts them in hit stun for, I can then use this move. And you can just figure out combos just looking at numbers, which is pretty amazing. I am obviously not there.
Yeah, I mean, it also helps that... Like I said, you can cancel certain moves into others, and generally it's universal rules, what can be cancelled into what. But sometimes you'll get something weird, like you'll read a move and says, oh yeah, you can cancel this into this other special move, and it makes no sense, like on a game level that you'd be able to do that, but it's just for that one move that character gets that advantage with it. So it's also useful to see those kind of things, because it's very unlikely that you'd figure it out on your own unless by accident.
So one of the things that's going to get in your way, though, is they're like, games aren't always universal about how much they're willing to show you this information and help you learn it.
Yeah, so in general, things that I've seen that are more... I guess it's like different philosophies, but let's just go over like some notable examples. Like Tekken, I know, is notorious for not wanting to share any frame data, so there is no official way to find out frame data for moves in Tekken. Usually it's either data mined or people just spend enough time figuring it out.
I mean, Harada, I believe, has gone on the record as being like anti-teaching as a fighting game concept, so he's
I remember...
He's pretty stern.
I don't know about the anti-teaching, but I do know definitely that at one point he did say he doesn't want to share frame data because he feels it harms the longevity of the game. Which, in a way, like, on a basic level, he is not entirely wrong. It does significantly accelerate the speed at which you learn a game. But I also don't know whether it's actually the thing that affects how long people will play your game. Like, it doesn't feel like people who've known frame data for, you know, Street Fighter or Arc System Works games dropped it faster or not.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the time when you're at the level where you're looking hard into frame data, you're kind of already in. The people I know who can tell me frame data from Capcom versus SNK2 are ridiculously passionate about that game.
Yeah. It's very hard to, like, like, I don't want to say, like, oh, Harada's obviously wrong about this. It is very hard to say because, you know, Tekken is an absurdly popular game, but it's also very hard to say whether Tekken is a popular game because it does not have a tutorial or frame data, or despite not having it. You know, it's there's no real correlation you can draw from that. But then another studio that that is extremely open to frame data, as and you can actually see it in the move list, and that still surprises me, is NetherRealm. At least I remember for Injustice doing that.
Yeah, no, they did it in MKX as well.
Okay.
It's very thorough about showing you, like, any frame data you want at any time, basically. Well, not during a match, but, you know.
Well, whenever you can pause, yeah, you can see it. And they have been very, open with that. Even with, like, inputs, they let you, like, tag certain moves and just have them displayed on your screen so you know, so you can see them at all times what the input is. So they've been very accommodating. But they're also one of the fighting game companies that do, like, collision-based, like, hit detection. They don't do hitboxes and hurtboxes. Which, for me, it makes it feel really weird to play, but at least, you know, they're open about how their system works.
Yeah, and it does, like, one of the downsides of that, in my opinion, you know, that I think there are upsides to it. It feels like, in a lot of instances when you're learning it, it feels a lot more intuitive the way they do hits. But also there are times where, because of the physics and the animations of the game, a combo that should be consistent can actually drop unexpectedly because of the collision.
Yes. One thing I also want to say is, while it is really good that, like, MK actually, Mortal Kombat games and NetherRealm games in general have this information at hand, I'm not too convinced you should actually show it in the move list, like in regular matches, because to me it feels like that should be a bit, like, hidden away behind a few menus, just so, like, if you're new to the game, it might feel like information overload. Like, if I'm, if I gave, like, somebody who's new to a fighting game, try to play and they want to check what their moves are, you know, you have, like, down, forward, square, or whatever, and then below you have, it says, like, startup, active, recovery, invulnerability, all sorts of properties. You're like, wait, what is this? I'm not sure. This is kind of scary. Like, that's kind of why, like, it feels like an advanced option that should be a bit tucked away, so that people who want to see it can see it, but people who aren't interested about it aren't overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, it definitely can be overwhelming. In games where they allow me to, like, turn on hitboxes and such frame data as I'm playing, I still, like, even I, like, have a lot of trouble parsing it, even though I know what all of it's supposed to mean.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, very commendable when it isn't. It's just, I guess, how direct you are about it. I think Skullgirls is the one that lets you just view absolutely everything, like all the hitboxes, hurtboxes. I don't know if they have throw boxes or guard boxes as well. But that works.
And the other thing that's just sort of worth noting is that Skullgirls is, and I would say Lab Zero and Zero, I'll even go one further and say specifically the lead of Skullgirls, Mike Zymont, or Mike Z, is almost fetishistic about hitboxes. You will see someone throw out a normal in Skullgirls, and you will see that the hitbox is made up of, like, 30 tiny hitboxes that exactly show the arc of the arm. It's kind of ridiculous and amazing.
Yeah, I generally think that's overkill. But I guess it's, like, on a case-by-case basis. If it's consistent in the game, then, like, sure, it's fine. But I think most games just, you know, put in, like, I don't know, like, 5 to 10 boxes at most.
Yeah, I don't think they need to go that far. But on the other hand, it does show in the game. Skullgirls, I don't feel like you ever have any question of whether something's going to hit or not.
Yes.
It does feel really crisp.
Yes.
So.
Yes. I think it's also that what also goes to their advantage is I think they nailed a lot of stuff on their first go because, you know, like, especially in Skullgirls, which is hand-drawn, having to rework a move of an animation would be, like, for an indie team, would be ridiculously expensive. So they probably thoroughly tested, like, very early versions of those moves until they were sure, yeah, this is how it's going to look. Or they were just very good at, you know, future-proofing things.
And what about our faves?
So I don't know about Arc System Works, whether they're open to it or not. I've never actually read anything official about it, but like Frame Data always comes out for Guilty Gear and Blaze Blue on time, so it doesn't feel like they've changed too much of it. And their patch notes are very thorough as well. Whenever they release something, they tell exactly. I think they actually like do note what the frame changes are or how long a move lasts. So I think they're just like, okay, we're going to do our due diligence. I don't think they go particularly the extra mile or not. Well, aside from the tutorial. In the tutorial, they explain very advanced concepts, but I generally can't recall offhand how deep they go into frame data specifically.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way to see frame data in any Arxis games. But, like, as you say, the data comes out pretty quick. And they do tend to support it after launch with, yeah, explaining it and what the changes they've made and stuff, so.
Yeah, I don't think they, like, ever just say, oh, here's a patch and, you know, deal with it. But how would you say for somebody who is just getting into fighting games, like, how should they employ this data? Like, how deep should they go when they're learning something new? Let's say somebody picks up Blaze Blue, or let's say Dragon Ball FighterZ, that's, like, newer. How should they go about it?
I mean, so I think the tips I said earlier are a good idea. Like, look for a move that has a decent amount of plus on block, so you can know something to use during pressure. Find a reversal if you have one, something with some early invulnerability. And then, like, the other thing is figure out, like, I feel like one of the things I'm most often tripped up by is supers. Partially because sometimes just the way games treat things is different. Like, I've seen supers where, like, you know, we've all played fighting games where you do a super and there's this, like, cinematic, it, like, zooms in and there's this cinematic, animation of them, like, winding up, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes the action is frozen while you're doing that, and sometimes it's not. And that's not even consistent within games.
Yeah, it's not. That's, like, a very big problem. And it's also, it's not even just, like, the flash animation. Like, sometimes it's, you see this, like, before the screen freezes, and before the cinematic angle or moment happens, you see the character starting to do the move, and they can be interrupted by taking damage. But then, in some cases, they won't spend meter because, oh, I went into a super flash. I didn't go into a super flash, so I'm not going to spend my meter. But in some cases, it does spend meter, and that also varies between games.
Yeah. So, like, I would specifically look at my supers, and I would try and look at, like, startup on stuff because, yeah, like, there was, I think it was Dragon Ball. I don't remember what move it was, but there was some super on one of my characters in Dragon Ball that I was just mystified as to what was going wrong because it would drop every single time. And it looked like it came out, like there was a super flash, there was a zoom in cinematic, and then it came out instantly. It looked like it was like a one frame super. It was not. It was one of the few supers where action continues during that cinematic freeze. And so it was actually like a 15 frame super. And it's like, oh, that's a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's, go back to playing Venom. His regular super has like a small startup before it enters the cinematic moment, and then his enhanced super immediately goes into the cinematic moment, which if you didn't know that, it would be very hard to spot. You'd just be like, oh, well, the enhanced one seems to work better, but you wouldn't be able to tell exactly why. So it's very good to check these things that are very hard to spot otherwise.
Yeah, so I think it's good for getting a base understanding of, like, your offensive tools, your defensive tools, your supers. And then from there, it's just, like, a thing you consult when something feels off, right? When you're like, that's weird, this move isn't behaving how I expect. You can look at its frame data and be like, oh, that's why.
Yeah. And usually where to find frame data depends on the game you're looking for. Usually for Arc System Works, there's the Dust Loop Wiki. But I think if you do like a Google search, you can generally find data for the game you're looking for because different fan bases have different areas where they collect the data. Like when I was doing when I was doing December, when I was playing like, you know, 4 or 5 games a day, I was playing some very obscure stuff, and my co-commentators could still find frame data.
But some of that frame data was weird.
Yes, very.
You get these moves like I don't I yeah. You play some of these like more niche like old fighting games and you're like, "Wait, this move is active for 80 frames? What?"
It's very impressive how refined this entire process got, yet it's still just an extremely background thing. It's not a front-facing thing. It definitely affects how you play, but it's just most people will never see it. They'll just go, "Oh man, this fighting game feels good," or "Man, this old fighting game feels really bad." And I, like you said, like for fighting games, for me, it's very impressive that, you know, this is a genre where somebody does a deep dive in something like this. Like usually when you talk about frame data and say, let's say a platinum game like Metal Gear Rising, you know, that also has frame data, you usually only really hear about that for speedrunning and nothing else. Or like doing super hard modes, like maybe somebody will like tell, "Oh yeah, like you can use this because that's its like frame properties," but I usually only hear it for speedrunning.
Yeah, or when something is ridiculously broken.
An example of batch frame data would be when I was playing Sonic Forces, and the lightning whip that you could use on your avatar is almost completely invulnerable from start to finish. So
Wow.
you can essentially mash against a boss that move and never actually take damage. So that's an example of bad frame tagging.
So we talked about all the ways that people can use it, the ways you can start to like learn frame data and make it work for you. But there's also just going to be a contingent of people that just don't like frame data, right? That don't like having to dive into this really technical level that kind of, I mean, some people might say it breaks the artifice of the game, right? How do you think people would do if they just decided to not bother with frame data? Is that doable?
I think that's fully doable, like personally. It takes much longer, because it's a lot more trial and error. How will it go for somebody who doesn't refer to frame data? It will mostly be, this move work in this situation. So you will be, for example, you'll maybe know what your fastest or slowest moves are, but in a lot of cases it'll be very matchup specific. Like, "Oh, when I'm fighting this character, he has this move, so I should use this move." And if you go through frame data, you'll maybe figure that out. Like, "Oh, I gotta look at the move that's giving me trouble, what its properties are, and then see what a proper response for me is." But if you don't look at that, it's just gonna be more trial and error in the sense of, "Oh, well, I'm just gonna try all these things until I find the one that works." And to be fair, unless I'm like super serious about like a fighting game, I'll probably not look at frame data and I'll just play like that. I'll try and just figure out what works and what doesn't. Like for example, I think I got fairly competent in Dead or Alive, like, you know, mid-level competent. I have never ever referred to Dead or Alive frame data. I just learned what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, I've never looked at any for Dragon Ball.
Yeah, like you can completely like do without it, I'd say. You know, if you start playing like, you know, tournament level, then, you know, if you're already that serious, you'll probably, you know, give it a glance or not. But it's not like, I'd say it's less important than, say, learning combos. Like, if you're averse to combos, you can still play a game, but they'll just be harder. So if you're averse to frame data, you can still play the game, and it'll just sometimes take longer to figure some stuff out.
Yeah, I think that's a good, they're a great tool for you to have, but in the end, it just helps you learn. Like, you can learn that information another way. It may take you longer, but this is a method of studying. It's not like you're not going to be playing and you're going to be like, haha, because I know the frame data, this does more damage. It's like, no, that's not how this works.
Yeah, and, so. And also knowing frame data is not necessarily a reflection of skill. Like, I've played against people who understand frame data very well and understand what the proper responses to something are, but when they're actually playing, they can't parse things enough, like, quickly enough to actually do the appropriate response. Like, I've had people basically be able to tell me how I should play, you know, and being right about it, but not being able to execute the same things.
Yeah. Yeah, just theoretical knowledge that doesn't apply because they're not ready for it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's fine. That's, you know, good if you want to get into coaching and things like that. But in general, it's not a reflection of your skill, is what I'm probably saying. Like, by virtue of what it is, better players will probably know it, but it's not a necessity, I think.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to hit up? I think that's pretty thorough.
No, I think we covered everything there is. I'd say, like you said earlier, it's getting busy, and there will be a lot of new fighting games, and we will probably give them some coverage and see what interesting things they do.
Indeed. I'm excited to, you know, dive into a bunch of new stuff and, you know, see new character designs, honestly, because that's one of my favorite things about playing a new fighting game is not just like, oh, okay, let's play this game with my friends, but it's like, let's see what character concepts people come up with, because people come up with some pretty neat things sometimes.
Yeah, for me, it's always interesting to try something new, because it's always interesting because everybody gives their game a unique flavor, so I want to just see, like, oh, what is the one unique thing that you do well, and it's what sets you apart from anything else, and I feel like the upcoming fighting games will all have some of that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, where can people find us?
So if you want to find me, I'm at SixDetmar on Twitter, and the pinned tweet on SixDetmar tells you what all my shows are, so I don't have to list them off right now.
Well,
hooray.
You can find me at MDKII, that's MDK Roman numerals 2, on Twitter. And there will be also a pin with my Twitch channel, which is kind of like not my main focus, and you can easily find my YouTube channel as well.
All right. Well, until next month, keep on fight. That's what we always say. Keep on fighting, right? That's our catchphrase here.
Maybe we should go stay neutral. Actually, no, you should be very passionate about things. Don't stay neutral.
Downright fear. No, somebody already copyrighted that one.
Hmm. No.
We'll work on it. Yeah, we'll work on it.
We'll find the catchphrase eventually.
Have a good night, y'all.
Night.